Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. I'm your co-host, Ron Edwards, coming to you from the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. Today's program will be without our co-host, Donald Allen, who is kind of on assignment, if you will. But there is nothing more appropriate in journalism than to be able to analyze situations which are as current as we speak. This has been a difficult week for the United States of America and for the quote-unquote tenaciousness and constitution, if you will, of the American people. It has been the week that was. The Boston Marathon, a fertilizer plant in an entire town in central Texas. The attempt to put fear into the hearts of government, both the legislative and the executive branch, with a very deadly poison, ricin, being mailed by a man whose claim to fame prior to that was that he did one of the best imitations of Elvis Presley, anybody in the southern part of the United States, if you will, a man by the name of Curtis. But it is Boston and Texas that began to shake the foundation of this nation. And then, again, of all places, in Governor Perry's Texas, you remember Governor Perry, the man who wanted to, quote-unquote, take Texas out of the Union, if you will, remindful of the 1860s, if you will, and that which led to the Civil War. But Governor Perry, Rick Perry, maintained that Texas didn't need the United States. In fact, the United States was a burden on Texas. Well, on the anniversary of the massacre of the Branch Davidians just outside of Waco, Texas, we have a mysterious explosion at a fertilizer plant. In fact, fertilizer plant is gone. Most of the town of West Texas is gone. Casualties are supposedly 14 dead, 175 injured. To some degree and in some regards, those numbers are pretty close in the case of injuries to the numbers in Boston, Massachusetts. But we will come back to Texas, to West Texas. We'll come back a tad to Mr. Curtis, if you will. We'll also come back a tad to the political murders in Kaufman County, Texas, where a district attorney, his wife, and his chief assistant were murdered over the last couple of months by a man who turned out to be the justice of the peace, former justice of the peace, who allegedly was stripped of his constitutional office and charged with the theft and convicted of the theft of three computers, which is kind of interesting. It became a family matter in Kaufman County as Eric Williams, the justice of the peace, a Caucasian. Oh, that's right. All of these were Caucasians. All of these were a part of, quote-unquote, white America. Part of a pattern in which we have not done very well as a nation to talk about in an honest and transparent manner, if you will. Now, if these had been black Americans, in fact, a lot of blacks probably wouldn't even be able to walk the streets or drive on the streets of America today. There would be so much recrimination, allegations, attacks. We'd be talking about quarantines and rounding black folk up. But, again, we're not supposed to get into that as it pertains to, quote-unquote, the lack of transparency on the issue of race in this country of ours. But Boston, Massachusetts, the Boston Marathon, just a little bit before 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, two bombs explode on the finishing route, if you will, of the Boston Marathon. Over 100 years of the Boston Marathon without any significant consequences or controversy, if you will, other than the preponderance of domination by black runners from Africa, primarily Ethiopia, Somalians, and et cetera. But that is another discussion again for another time, because a tragedy was to take place. And by the way, we will open the phone line at 763-228-1748. 763-228-1748, but we will not open the lines until 3:30 Central Standard Time here in the Twin Cities. And the reason is we want to dissect, we want to review, we want to analyze just what happened as best we know it as Americans. Of course, we are not a part of the security and intelligence community, per se. And so consequently, there is much that, we will be, as a citizenry, we will be spoon-fed and provided with at a time appropriate in the minds of those that control appropriate things that we should know. But in the meanwhile, we still are free of mind, if you will, and we have a chance to analyze. And as a journalist and as a historian and as an investigative reporter, we immediately, when the reports, we saw pictures within a very short period of time of the tragedy, the carnage, three people killed, if you will, an 8-year-old child, 29-year-old woman, and a Chinese national who had really just arrived in the United States of America to begin her graduate studies at a Boston college, if you will. We had great difficulty as it pertains to information on that. I'm talking about the government to finally identify and affirm that a quote-unquote foreigner, and in this case a person of another ethnic racial persuasion, had been killed. In fact, it was only after the Chinese reported from Beijing that a Chinese national had been one of those that had died in the carnage that was to become Boston and the marathon, did the government, the State Department and others, confirm that a Chinese national, a young female, had been in fact killed. This came also on the heels of the detaining of a number of Saudis, if you will, citizens who were identified immediately as persons of interest, even though the prime person of interest was himself hospitalized in a Boston hospital. But security experts, and my God, there were many, weren't there, on all of the TV programs, channels, and cable, and et cetera, as the prime consideration seemed to be not so much to get us the news, but to get the ratings up, if you will. It was just unbelievable. But the Saudi citizen was considered to be a prime suspect because he had burns on his hands, if you will. And we saw a number by late Monday, a number of experts maintained that that was unusual, that did not fit the pattern, and that consequently this Saudi national, brown-skinned, olive-skinned individual, was a prime suspect. But the real eerie feeling for many of those of you in Black America had to come when at around 7:30 Central Standard Time here in the Midwest, a streamer went out across the bottom of the screen for CNN with Wolf Blitzer and John King and that whole crew. By the way, they really didn't assign what few African Americans they have left as a part of their news reporting staff, particularly after the dismissal of Soledad O'Brien. Oops. Don Lemon, as example, really wasn't allowed to get into the equation until 36 hours later, after it was determined that information that was posted by CNN, that police and authorities were looking for a prime suspect, a person of maximum interest, if you will. We're now talking in terms of information that, of course, was provided to us as pertains to our contacts, our relationships as a journalist, was looking for a dark-skinned or black, like dark, black male suspect. And, of course, that night in Boston, a lot of young African-Americans found themselves being rounded up and clearly understood the importance of immediately going to ground, if you will. Going to ground means getting off the street, getting out of the sight of law enforcement authority, as hundreds and hundreds of police at that point were pouring into Boston from all across Massachusetts and, of course, other jurisdictions in Vermont and New Hampshire and Maine and Rhode Island and Connecticut were offering paramilitary services, the Massachusetts National Guard, which had already been activated for the Boston Marathon, were already in place and, of course, were put into a combat status, if you will. The president, even the African-American president of the United States, Barack Obama, was already being criticized because he had not immediately declared on Monday that this was an act of terror, if you will, though clearly it were two explosive devices to go off. Certainly it wasn't a gas main, if you will. It wasn't a water pipe. It wasn't a water heater or a boiler or et cetera. And so clearly whoever had detonated the two explosions had did it with, oops, malice and forethought. That becomes important later on, 4 days later, as the nation is at a fever pitch with anger and frustration and fear and et cetera, that America is once again under attack. But the president was criticized because he was not quick to point a finger of condemnation and accusations and accusatory, if you will, at Muslims, because that's really what the angle was. In fact, by 9, 10 o'clock Monday night, again, security experts, all, you know, they're all former retired FBI agents and Homeland Security and NSA and and other security departments and official entities of the federal government. I've never seen so many retired living well experts, if you will, some who have not been in the field of intelligence for a decade, but hey, they put them on TV. And they were all saying that this had clearly been a Al-Qaeda attack, if you will, probably emanating in Yemen, if you will. Others saying even Iran, if you will. The president, of course, the next day comes on, and I thought kind of made a mistake by giving a very passionate, patriotic speech. And by the way, Monday in Boston was Patriots Day also, you know, as we said. The marathon is a big event. In Boston has been for years. And so on Tuesday, the president of the United States was saying, we shall respond, we shall retaliate, we will find you and follow you to the ends of the earth. Well, you didn't have to go far. All you had to do was just go down the highway, down the freeway to a place called Watertown, Massachusetts. And even before you get there, a place called Cambridge, Massachusetts, which is just across the river from Boston, Massachusetts, the site of the carnage. But in the meanwhile, on Monday and Tuesday, we were pumping ourselves up here in the United States that this was an action by the little sand bunnies, if you will, of the Middle East, that it emanated from the dark corridors and the dark dungeons of Al-Qaeda, if you will, be it Al-Qaeda in Yemen, Al-Qaeda in Saudi Arabia, Al-Qaeda in Iraq, Al-Qaeda in Libya, Al-Qaeda in Morocco, and Al-Qaeda in the United States. It did not make any difference. Senators such as McCain and Lindsey Graham and Jeff Sessions, the old Klansman out of Alabama, Jeff Sessions, were already talking in terms of the need to tighten security. And by the way, and in this morning's edition of many of our papers across the country, the analysis is being made that this terrorist attack, and particularly in light of who the two suspects, one deceased and one now in captivity, had done to the issue of immigration. And so for our friends in the immigration community, if you will, talking in terms of specific new legislation that will allow 11 million Hispanic Latinos to be given extended pardons, if you will, and to become Americanized over a period of, 14 years. Well, they need to be careful that the debate could very well shift in the Congress of the United States, irrespective of Senator Rubio of Florida, because of the information that is now being gathered by the intelligence agencies of the United States with respect to the problems of letting too many of the wrong people into the United States. Watch that closely, my friends, who are much concerned and have been pushing immigration and have been pushing the legalization and the Americanization of over 11 million people. I always wondered and always have been bothered by that same lack of passion from our friends in the so-called immigration community during the time that there was a great debate in this country over a decade ago about black Haitians, and even before that, black Africans, who were really not welcome and who there was significant and well-maintained embargoes and restrictions on the numbers that would be allowed into the country, if you will, particularly our black Cuban brothers and sisters, if you will, who were oftentimes turned back, not the ones that were able to flee with significant assets and et cetera to Miami, who were able to kind of blend in with the other Latino populations. I'm talking about the black African looking Cubans, if you will, the Afro-Cubans, as they were referred to, how they were turned back. How I'm still reminded by the riot at the Atlanta Federal Penitentiary. I know there's some of you out there who are historians, or say you are, who remember that riot, as black Cubans protested and expressed their outrage and frustration with being treated in the manner that they were and had been treated and had been incarcerated, if you will, after coming through dangerous and shark-infested waters to this country seeking freedom, and were made to understand that freedom was for some and not for all, and how they rioted at the Atlanta Federal Penitentiary in Atlanta, Georgia. And I well remember the immediate discussion about the fact that particularly certain kinds of Cubans should not be allowed into the country. And in fact, that doctrine still applies unless they can play baseball, if you will, and earn money for a white-owned Major League Baseball team. And that's all there is, white-owned sports franchises here in the United States. And so we see all of this emerging as on Wednesday and Thursday there continued to be speculation. And then the pictures were released, if you will. Pictures were so important because there had been so much speculation by the right-leaning media in this country, and not only confined to Fox, if you will, particularly CNN, had become rather undisciplined in their analysis of the fact that this was the brown-skinned, dark-skinned people of the world. Consequently, that's why 3 days prior they had ran these reports that the authorities were looking for a, and we've repeated again, dark-skinned or black male, if you will. And so when the pictures came out, when at about 6 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, the FBI spokesperson and Massachusetts State Police and et cetera, and of course with Governor Deval Patrick, who I thought was one of the most outstanding political leaders in handling for that 4-day period the demand that it be announced and declared that it was, quote-unquote, those dirty, filthy Arabs and Muslims who had been involved. Now, to some degree, they got some of their wish because the two prime suspects, though now others, particularly of the Chechen nationality, are being rounded up all through New England, and they'll be rounded up around the rest of the country in the coming days, did appear to be practicing Muslims, but who had attempted to assimilate the American dream, but something happened. And these were two young men who had come here in, what was it, 2003? And had attempted to live the American dream, particularly the surviving suspect, the 19-year-old Farid, if you will, in fact, was attending, and boy, didn't they suppress that for a long time, attending college there in the Boston area, if you will, working on a degree in advanced science, if you will. Now we have additional recriminations, and now it gets sensitive. In fact, what we would like to do as we continue this kind of analysis of where we're heading down a very slippery slope. And we haven't forgotten Texas and, you know, what really may have happened there. But we would suggest for you, those of you that like to study and analyze and connect the dots, go back and read the 9/11 Commission report. It's, you know, entitled Final Report of the National Commission on Terrorist Attacks upon the United States. Go back, take a look at it. Read some of the reflections, particularly go to those chapters that deal with the following, if you will. First of all, you need to read that portion that deals with the foundation of the new terrorism. But specifically, take a look at 6.1 through 6.5, from threat to threat, and then 7.1 to 7.4. These are pages 174 through 241. The attack looms. And then read pages 254 through 266. The system was blinking red, if you will. Take a look at both foresight and hindsight at pages 339 through 353 of this report that was chaired by, you know, great quote-unquote Americans, extremely knowledgeable. Thomas Kern, you remember him, and Lee Hamilton, the former congressman out of Indiana. Of course, one of the things that happened, and we talked about this on our television programs, which we've had and aired here in the Twin Cities for 24 years actually, we always found it puzzling that there was really no persons of color, if you will, even with former generals, if you will, and individuals who had served in the intelligence services. There was a feeling that they, or we kind of people, African Americans, did not bring anything to the table that would be significant, if you will. But for those of you that are trying now to get a feeling on how the situation is going to be handled with respect to the relationship between the two suspects and Mother Russia, start doing your studying, start doing your analysis, because there's going to have to be some twisting and turning, and as they used to say back in the 1940s, there's going to have to be some jitterbugging going on. And then, for those of you that really want to get deep into just how serious this narrative is, read the book Prelude to Terror. It talks about the rogue CIA, the same CIA who's attempting to clean its hands in the tradition of Pontius Pilate as it pertains to Benghazi. Oh, people don't even talk about Benghazi anymore. But the reason we suggest that you take a look at this is that, again, for those of you that have been very passionate about immigration, if you will, of course, many of you were just as passionate about gun control, which, oops, at the same time that Boston was exploding, the Senate of the United States and the Congress of the United States was turning aside what appeared to be on paper and in the opinion polls a 90% plurality of Americans who said they at least wanted universal background checks and some at least minimal controls as it pertains to the bad guys getting the guns, if you will. Timing is everything, both in politics and in the history of a society, a nation, a republic, a country, whatever you may equate it to. Timing is everything, if you will. And because our attention spans are what they are, very short, very absent of recollection and et cetera, if you keep more than two things on the plate, one forgets to even remember how to pick up the knife and fork and continue to do what one should do, and that is provide nourishment to oneself. In this case, we're talking about providing continued nourishment to the brain, to the mind, remembering all of those things that are going on around you, if you will, and particularly those things that are so fundamentally important, quote-unquote, to your sense of placement in the society. Placement means being a part of the democratic quote-unquote process. And so on the question of immigration, on the question of statements now by Senators Graham and McCain and Sessions and others of the extreme, quote-unquote, congressional right, be very cautious, my friends, that in fact, the majority leader, Senator Reid, Democrat of Nevada, may very well be induced, if you will, to decide to put immigration on the back burner for maybe later on this summer because of the passion and the reservations that people have now about that saying on the Statue of Liberty about, you know, providing to us, quote unquote, those who seek liberty, freedom, and justice. Now, there is not, and because of how our educational system works here in the United States of America, probably 9 in 10 Americans have no idea what Chechnya is, where Chechnya is located, and clearly have no understanding about the conflict that has torn that nation and its people apart, actually long before 1999, where experts and spoon feeders and those that spend a lot of time trying to convince us what it is that we should be thinking about. The Chechnyan situation had been at play for many years. In fact, we take you back to some of the bios on Joseph Stalin, the strong man, the real terrorist of the world, along with Adolf Hitler, and his ruling and regime leading up to the Second World War and, quote-unquote, through the Second World War. Chechnya, they were kind of considered to be, America's, the Russia's version of America's Negro problem. And you really have to go study. And so those of you that like to do that, feel like you need to do that, go check the real history of Chechnya, if you will. And also, in doing that, and what we just said minutes ago on this program, that in the 1930s and 40s, Chechnyans were considered to be the equivalent of a Negro in America, if you will. In fact, doing a series of kind of ugly back and forth between the United States and the Soviets when Mr. Putin was the prime minister at that time, and this has been a man that's been in power now for 20 years. When Mr. Putin, in a moment of sarcasm, would remind America's diplomats about that the Chechen problem was Russia's problem, just like the Negro is your problem, if you will. And it was interesting that in some of the analysis of Soviet intelligence during that particular period in the 90s and into the 2000s, as prime minister or premier, Putin was crushing brutally the Chechen uprisings, if you will, that the United States was once again reminded that this was Russia, Mother Russia's Negro problem, if you will. The United States understood, because history will show that as brutal repercussions and brutal sanctions and et cetera were taken inside of the enclave known as Chechnya, if you will, which is on the Caspian Sea in the Caucasus, if you will. By the way, the Caucasus is really the forerunner of how the word Caucasian, which is a racial identification level. For those of you that say that you're researchers, go research, get on your computers. The Caucasus, a region there that is comprised of nations such as the nation of Georgia, if you will, Armenia, and a couple of others. In fact, on the maps published by the Russians, if you will, the Russian Federated Republic, they don't even show Chechnya anymore. Chechnya is a non-existent entity. And if Putin has his way, the Chechen people will ultimately disappear from the Caucasus, from that part of Mother Russia, if you will, because they are considered to be contrary to the teachings of the Russian Orthodox Church and ideology of quote-unquote Mother Russia. In fact, it was amazing to look at some of the historical data that talks in terms of the position that started to emerge about the Chechens under Tsarist Russia, if you will. In fact, for those of you that study and like to study the Crimean War of 1854, 1855, go back and take a look at some of the real debates in the British Parliament and the French Parliament, if you will, at that time. Both the French and the British, as they talked about committing their forces, and really what turned out to be a conflict about who would control that part of the world, if you will, a piece of massive land in between the Caspian Sea and the Black Sea. Take a look also at the history and the encouragement given to the Turks and the Ottoman Empire in that same period of time, the 1850s, 1860s, as pertains to some of these problems by rogue Muslim types in that part of the world. So when one talks about how these two young men were able to disguise their absolute hatred and disdain for the United States of America, one must first and foremost know the history of from whence these young men came from and their relatives. I watched closely yesterday their uncle there in Montgomery County, Maryland, where we have a significant group of listeners. And I saw a man who had enough sense to know that he had to say all the right things about his relationship or lack of relationship with his two nephews, because he knew what was coming as a man who had fled repression by the Soviet, or in this case the Russian, security forces and apparatus and et cetera. He knew that he very well could have all of his privileges here in the United States revoked, and that he could be sent back post haste to Mother Russia to meet a fate which could include execution, depending on how the Russian security forces had analyzed him and had categorized him as it pertains to a threat, really, to Russian security. Now, that takes us to another troubling aspect, and our security and intelligence entities will have to get the right handle, and they're working on it now, even as we speak. And that is that the oldest brother, the 26-year-old, in 2012, according now to the information being advanced, returned to Mother Russia for 6 months, which was interesting, which then raises the question, why would in 2011 Russian security and intelligence forces request allegedly of the United States to profile the 26-year-old, now deceased, quote-unquote, Chechen, if they were so concerned about his security, quote-unquote, clearance? Why would they have let him into Mother Russia? Because that then leads to, where did these two young men acquire all of these bomb-making skills? You have to understand, to be able to take a pressure cooker, my friends, and make it into an effective bomb, if you will. But at the same time, keep this in mind, a bomb that carried out significant personal mayhem and personal casualties, if you will, of limb and et cetera, that the bomb was not powerful enough, as was in the case of Texas, to basically do any damage to any of the buildings where these two explosive devices went off in front of. I mean, think about that. Most terrorists pride themselves of not only creating chaos as it pertains to human casualties, but creating a situation where there is significant monetary loss, where there is significant damage to buildings, to properties, to everything from buses to subways, et cetera, et cetera. We make reference to the bombings in Madrid a couple of years ago, the continued bombings that are taking place in Iraq and Afghanistan and places such as that, if you will. The bomber is always taught that it is important to make maximum damage, to create maximum damage that equates into monetary loss, if you will. I mean, one of the reasons that, you know, we really, and by the way, some of that is in the 9/11 Commission report, that so many on the right became just outraged and concerned about 9/11. I'm not sure that they were all, you know, upset about 3,000 human beings being lost. They were upset about the insurance cost as those two big buildings collapsed and everything around it, quote unquote, was damaged or affected. I mean, you're talking about $500 billion, if you will, of damage to infrastructure and et cetera, as well as the significant amount and disappearance of amounts of gold and other quote-unquote assets, liquid assets, that were stored in vaults in the deep basements and caverns of quote-unquote the Twin Towers. Those are things that we no longer talk about in America, if you will. And so when we saw the pictures come in of the bombing of the Boston Marathon, and I mean, clearly the devices, pressure cookers, things that you use to, and I bet some of you right now are preparing your pressure cooker to, you know, cook and boil some good old food, if you will, maybe some ribs, if you will, or vegetables or et cetera, you know, whatever people use pressure cookers for other than as bombs, if you will. That also brings us to the running gun battle Thursday night, going from Cambridge into Watertown, Massachusetts, that these two young men who initially we being told were not of very significant intellectual capabilities, in other words, they obviously weren't too intelligent because they got caught, I submit and maintain they didn't want to escape. They wanted to do just what they were doing. They wanted to commit as much mayhem and injury and terror in the hearts of Bostonians and Americans as they possibly could. But it was also the ability of these pipe bombs and homemade grenades and et cetera. Now, what we are being told here in the United States is that they got all of it off the Internet, if you will. But still, if you get it off the Internet, you have to have some understanding, some competency level to know how to mix things together, because you just don't want to mix the wrong compounds together because things will blow up right there in your face. Now the question is, what were their intentions with all these other bombs that they found? In fact, their stockpile was so volatile, if you will, that yesterday as police went into the facility or the residence that has been identified as their, or at least where one of them lived, that the explosives that were found there were so unstable that there was a controlled, what is called a controlled blast, a controlled explosion. So that becomes another question. I mean, what were these young men told to do with those additional explosions? Now, we said just seconds ago, what were they told to do? Because you remember early on Monday, before they got into the so-called identification of a person of significant interest and a suspect, you know, dark-skinned or black male, we were being told that this was a lone wolf, and there was much discussion, in fact, on our television program to be aired tomorrow here in the Twin Cities, and we taped on a Tuesday evening. We maintained that it was rather suspicious, the quickness of the conservative right to maintain that this was a lone wolf. We think, as a commentator and a journalist, that this has been reinforced this morning by the demands by Senator McCain of Arizona, Senator Graham of South Carolina, and Senator Sessions of Alabama, that the president must invoke the enemy combatant statute and confine this individual to that particular status. What that means is that the individual very well could be taken to Guantanamo for interrogation. You know, really, and we say this with all seriousness, we wonder how much torture or rendition and waterboarding will go on with this young man. Now, the Obama administration would want to lead us to believe that that is not the order of the day. That will not happen, if you will. But we have learned in America that the highest authority does not always want to know what is going on in order to protect one's position as the higher authority, or in this case, the alleged final authority, other than a series of motions made by the attorneys. Now, the suspect will be brought into a federal courtroom, and the determination will be made by a federal judge. It'll be interesting to see, by the way, as we move along and back and forth on this, if, in fact, there will be a petition by the Attorney General to designate this individual as a enemy combatant and place this individual under the jurisdiction of the Enemy Combatant Act, which then allows the individual to be tried by secret tribunal comprised of military officers, if you will, in closed and secret sessions, and possibly at a location not revealed to the general public. Now, in the next coming weeks, the Obama administration will appear to defend its position that this will be a full public disclosure. We will begin to, well, in fact, we're already hearing them. Even as we talk, we are looking at information coming in. We are already being told that the suspect, Farhan, is already in indicating some things. In fact, the story is so well crafted right now that just before the apprehension in that boat in the driveway there on Franklin Street in Watertown, we were being told that the previous night when the Mercedes was hijacked or carjacked, that during the course of the ride, that the two suspects, one now deceased, told the individual whose car was being carjacked that they were the Maritime or the Marathon bombers, that they had carried out this dastardly act and that they were who everyone said that they were, which is an interesting kind of revelation / confession, which almost ranks up there with what is known as a deathbed confession in light of what happened to the 26-year-old brother, the one who spent 6 months in the Soviet Union, or as they now call it, the Russian Federated Republic, if you will. Now, this will be a test of America's sense of resolve to deal with a very strong right-wing push in this country that started with 9/11, if you will, and that is to begin to erode and erode and erode constitutional guarantees. We well remember the promises that were made after Oklahoma City. Oh, by the way, the month of April is a terrible month in American history. David Koresh and Waco, just the 20th anniversary just a couple days ago as the fertilizer plant was blowing up in West Texas. Certainly Hitler's birthday. I mean, how many, you know, Nazi sympathizers talk in terms and celebrate Adolf Hitler's birthday, if you will. And then, of course, the situation now with the marathon, if you will, as well as other events that have taken place in the United States of America. In that part of the country, by the way, down there around Waco and up towards Dallas and then on up towards Oklahoma City, people still talk in terms of the Murrell Federal Building, if you will, and what that was all about. And so you have really a division in this country of two very extremist groups, those on the left who have been nowhere as near effective with, you know, advancing, quote unquote, their anger, as the right has been, if you will. But the situation with David Koresh was always a interesting one with respect to the debate and then the way that the federal government handled itself. But for those of you, so that we are clear, because as an African-American, we feel a absolute obligation to remind ourselves that the bombing of facilities and et cetera and the burning of people is not something that is not been rendered upon African Americans. In fact, the first aerial attack where aircraft were used to bomb a community here in the United States of America was Tulsa, Oklahoma, if you will. In Tulsa, Oklahoma, during the race riots of 1921, the Oklahoma National Guard's airplanes, they called them bird planes back in those days, actually bombed the Greenwood District of Tulsa, Oklahoma, killing a large number of African Americans or Negroes during the racial rioting and etc. And of course, for those of you in the East, I know, that have ties to Philadelphia, you still can hear the screams of African-American women and children as row houses in Philadelphia were being bombed by quote-unquote military-style helicopters and et cetera. Of course, the out there was is that the go-ahead was given, the authorization was given by the then black mayor of that city, if you will. But the fact of the matter is, Big Brother, Uncle Sam, told him this is the order of the day. And then there was the bombing of a white separatist outside of Seattle, Washington, where the FBI used a very powerful, what they call blockbuster bomb, to destroy his quote-unquote blockhouse, concrete blockhouse, almost like a pillbox, there just outside of Seattle. And see what happens. And we have said this before to our listening audiences over the last decade and a half, that you go out in a place like Idaho, up around Sandpoint, Idaho, up around Priest Lake and the Priest River and et cetera, where the planning went on for the what was supposed to be the bombing of the Martin Luther King Day celebration in Spokane, Washington, a couple of years ago. You have to understand, both the left and the right have their heroes. They have their martyrs, if you will, and they talk passionately. The right has done a little better job here in America with respect to exacting, quote-unquote, their version of justice and their version of punishment for those who have, quote-unquote, sinned, if you will, violated, quote-unquote, the reputation and the legacy of their martyrs, if you will. And so for some reason or another, April, I don't know if it's the blossoming of the flowers, the coming out of the bees or whatever it is, but April actually has a tendency, with the exception of everyone talks about September 11th, but April has always been a violent month in America. And when you see what happened like in Mississippi, even though they maintain that, you know, that Mr. Curtis was an angry American, see, one of the things that we're not facing up to in our beloved America, and so much of it in the last 11 minutes of today's program, so much of it has been generated by the hatred, if you will, the just absolute outrage that this black man, this Barack Obama, sits in the White House of the United States of America and presides over this nation, if you will. And it's just really difficult for people to adjust to. Now, I do not think that our Chechen brothers were being driven by that. I think that you're going to find that they were being driven by the broken promises of the United States and the deals that were cut back in the late 1990s and the early 2000s with Putin, with the Russian Federated Government, as Chechens were being massacred. And there was a brutal put down of the Chechen, quote-unquote, uprising and nationalism and et cetera. What is disturbing the authorities as we speak, as they analyze and et cetera, was that both of these young men did everything they could to Americanize themselves. The older brother, apparently a good boxer, won a couple of titles in the Golden Gloves, actually at least made it appear that he was even thinking about a boxing professional career. Picture of him in this morning's edition of many of the major papers around America, showing him in a pugilistic contest, if you will, in the Golden Gloves tournament, if you will. His younger brother, the 19-year-old, if you will, doing all of the things that was important, if you will, having himself Americanized, pledging allegiance to the flag, pledging allegiance to the perception of greatness of the United States of America, and yet very quietly, even with their friends, the younger brother, playing soccer. Indications I was a good soccer player. Maybe he would have had a professional career in soccer, if you will. Soccer, a big sport in that part of the world, in Chechnya and Europe and Africa and other places like that. And yet they disguised extremely well their propensity for significant anger against this country, and what it stood for. And that's troubling. We have said it as a journalist, as an author, if you will, in our books and et cetera, for many years, that as long as we continue to not respect the observations and the concerns, the sense of frustration that turns to the sense of betrayal by others in this nation, that we will never get to the heart of what some of the problems are based on race and religion and ethnicity, if you will. But people who are far smarter, more brilliant than we could ever think of being, I mean, that's why they're in control, according to them, are saying that such discussion, such reflection, such transparency, such depth in an attempt to reach the truth shall not be the order of the day. And so you think about this as we go into the last minutes of this program. You think about how many more of these types of young men, be they from Chechnya, you understand, be they from the Russian Federated Republic, be they from Romania or Czechoslovakia or Slovakia, as it's called now, Poland, if you will, or be they from Peru or Ecuador or Chile, or be they from Africa, or be they from Asia, if you will. How many who the experts think have been properly Americanized, who have even taken the oath to become naturalized American citizens, who harbor these kind of hostilities towards the mother country, if you will. How many of those are in play? Then that takes us back to the debate that is going on right now amongst the conservative wing of the Congress of the United States, and their spokespersons are already speaking. They're testing the president, by the way, of saying we don't want to hear unless it is sanitized and specifically crafted in a way that we of the right like it. We do not want to hear what this young man's thoughts were. If he chooses to speak, if he chooses to testify before a court or a secret tribunal, we do not want to hear what it is that he was dissatisfied as it pertains to his love or lack of for the United States of America. And see, that's why it's so dangerous. And hopefully some of you who are politically active will reach out to the President of the United States. You will say to the Obama administration that let us have a public gathering, a public trial, if you will. Let us hear the testimony. Let us hear what it was that happened during the time that they came here in 2003, according to the most recent information. And that 10-year period in which minds were changed, delusion began to set in, anger became the order of the day, and murder and mayhem became the final solution. You know, we're always reminded in this society about the doctrine of the final solution. In fact, again, some of that is in the book Prelude to Terror, in which the author, who was a CIA operative himself, talks in terms of what the Pacific plans were, going back as far as Alan Dulles, who technically was the first director of the CIA. It's entitled Prelude to Terror. The author's name, Joseph J., and we spell the last name for you, T-R-E-N-T-O, Trenov. Joseph J., if you will. And, of course, many of you know about, of course, I assume that some of you who are internationalists, if you will, pull the 9/11 Commission report out and review it periodically, because in many respects, you know, the panel really laid it out. They had an enormous staff, by the way. They had a lot of people on the commission staff who worked to craft and put together the information and the predictions, if you will, the analysis of what was about to come. In some respects, it is probably here. We also would advise to keep a close eye on what the story will be, what we will be fed out of West Texas, the city, the town of West Texas, which by and large is really no more, if you will. and what really happened at that fertilizer plant, and if there had been any early warnings for those who identified themselves as supporters of David Koresh, who had identified themselves as still angry over what happened on that tragic day there outside of Waco, Texas, if you will. Or were they supporters of others who were, quote-unquote, the children of the catastrophes and the disasters of April in the United States of America? I'm not sure what will happen. But there seems to be a dark cloud. Irrespective of what our beloved president says with respect to our heroism and our tenaciousness for putting ourselves back on our feet, there's a dark cloud. There's a troubling cloud over our beloved nation, if you will. There's a lot of anger. And we go back to what we said just minutes ago. There are people who are so twisted, out of shape. Their minds have, in fact, just imploded and exploded in their anger about what this quote-unquote god-dang nation stands for. They use another word. We try to be as civil as possible here on this blog radio program. That they are just angry. And there is too much anger, but what should trouble all of us is that it is an anger that is well hid and well disguised. And maybe in some regards, the left has done a better job than the right in disguising that anger and then translating, if you will, crafting it back in to a plan of action in which in their minds is a part of the final solution. I'm just not sure. But it is a part of things that need to be discussed. People sending poison through the mail, public officials killing other public officials because of what appeared to be a crime of theft of three computers, if you will. Anger, shootings, stabbings, mayhem. Just a lot of anger, and we really don't want to dissect it. And let me say this in closing about that. We've said it before. In fact, we will probably, certainly our colleague, Mr. Allen, will hopefully be back by next week. We will have the regular phone lines open. We never really talk about why Billy Bob and those of the let's be armed, left and right, what it really is that they fear. See, I maintain Black America, they fear you. It's you that they fear. It's you that they use as a justification, quote unquote, to reinforce the Second Amendment, if you will. It's the reason that, quote unquote, and I've heard them say it as a member of the National Rifle Association, I've heard them say it, we need our guns. We need to be armed. We need to deal with the dark threat that has descended upon our nation. And you see, on Monday and Tuesday, though, the intelligence services already knew that this was, quote-unquote, domestic terrorism with international ties. But folks knew that the level of anger in this country had began to break over and pour over the dikes, if you will. And so now we'll have to have, well, therapeutic sessions. You know, therapeutically, for those of you that have mental health problems, I mean, because every time something like this happens, it's a person with a mental health problem. I wonder why we don't indicate that the founding fathers of the United States of America, George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Hancock, and others, must have had mental problems because they wanted to take on King Georgie and break away from Britain. We don't accuse them of having mental problems and being involved in, quote-unquote, standing up and fighting and taking on the redcoats and their, quote-unquote, mercenary armies from Germany and et cetera. And so I've always wondered about that doctrine that is now in play, that these people are just young men who have become, quote-unquote, mentally unstable, if you will. Well, we have a lot of mental instability in this country at this hour. But again, God bless America, and particularly God bless Black America, because you are going to need it in the coming months. Appreciate the opportunity to be with you. We will be returning next Saturday. Hopefully our co-host Don Allen will be back with us. But again, may America stay safe until America is able to talk about the real problems that besiege us. Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. I'm Ron Edwards. This is On Point.